Episode 8 of Top Turtle MMA is brought to you by Grappler's Toolbox. Grappler's Toolbox is a toolbox filled with all of the essentials for you or the grappler in your life. It comes with things like stinky gear deodorant for all of the stinky gear that you might have to wash up. It comes with sport beans, which are energy beans for you to get ready for your grappling session.
Is that kind of like when Jack got his magic beanstalk beans?
Better. Awesome. And it comes with Sisu mouthguards. Dave, tell us a little bit about the product Sisu mouthguards.
So glad you asked. Sisu mouthguards, the other sponsor for Top Turtle MMA, is the most breathable, lightweight mouthguard on the market. Now, you're going to want to head over to sisuguard.com. That's sisuguard.com. And take a look at what kind of mouthguard might best suit your sporting endeavors. They got the Aero Guard for team sports. They got the Max Guard for high impact sports. And they got the Junior Guard for youth sports. And if you're feeling fancy, go ahead and get yourself a Sisu case. It's a nice little way to protect your mouth guard that protects your mouth.
Make sure you head over to our sponsors, grapplerstoolbox.com and sisuguard.com, to take care of the people who take care of us.
All right, we are rolling. Top Turtle MMA, episode 8. I am excited to be here. I am your co-host, David Tremonti. I am joined by always as Daniel Gumby Gumdrop Vreeland.
Gumdrop's a new one.
So, Gumby, how can people reach you if they wanted to find your writings or maybe even follow you on that little social media website known as Twitter?
So if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can get me at Gumby Vreeland. That's V-R-E-E-L-A-N-D. You can also hit up our show at Top Turtle MMA. And if you want to get at me and see some of my writings, you can see them at MMA-Manifesto.com. You can see an article or two there that Dave's put up as well. And if you want to hit up the show with an email, you can go to email us at topturtlemma@gmail.com.
And if you want to follow us each week in your favorite iPod streamable, whatever you kids do today for your streaming podcast needs, you can follow us on TuneIn.
You can get us on iTunes too.
Stitcher.
You can get us on SoundCloud.
You could basically get us anywhere there's a podcast.
Yeah, you can get that RSS feed just about anywhere. So if you like what you hear, make sure that you hop on whatever one of those you like best and leave us a comment, too.
All right. So what a weekend in MMA, Gumby. Anderson Spider Silva loses the decision nod to Michael Bisping in his home country at the O2 Arena in London. What were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts, I actually wrote an article on MMA Manifesto this morning about it. My initial thoughts were, and this is hard for me to say because notoriously I'm not a big Michael Bisping fan. I don't like the way he talks trash, which is funny because, you know, it's not that different from Conor McGregor, and I eat Conor McGregor's with a spoon every time he talks. I don't know what the difference is there. But
well, Conor McGregor's like a black belt at shit talk. I'd say Michael Bisping is a solid purple belt.
Yeah, but I don't know what it is that I like about Conor's that I hate about Bisping's. I mean, yeah, I guess it's better. The balloon animals comment at the Diaz conference was just hilarious.
One of my favorite comments of all time. And for anyone who missed it at the Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor press conference, McGregor said that Nate Diaz teaches kids jiu-jitsu on Sundays. It's like he likes to make gun signs with his left hand and balloon animals with his right hand, which just about sums up Nate Diaz. But
anyway. I loved it. And like, there's also like the added hint in there too that like points out that Diaz is a clown. Which is kind of funny and a children's entertainer. But back to Bisping. I don't know what it is I dislike about it, but I felt like a really good sense of like feeling happy for him as like a human afterwards. Because like, I mean, all he's ever wanted to do is fight Anderson Silva. He said that he would like feel incomplete and like he couldn't look his grandkids in the eyes one day if he told them that he fought in the age of Anderson Silva but never fought him.
That's dramatic.
Yeah, I know. It's really great for him that he was able to get that win, and I'm not sure that he doesn't deserve the win, because, you know, I had, like, some people point out that they thought Anderson won. When they read the cards 48-47 on every card, I assumed Anderson had won. I had three rounds to Anderson, but, like, after it was read, I was like, yeah, I guess that's fine, too. Like, it wasn't, like, appalling to me. It was just like a hard fight to score, and I know that's cliche, but it was really hard to score.
I agree completely. So wait, I want to back this up. I don't want to take this in two parts. One is on the Michael Bisping and his place in history, and then two is on the actual fight itself. in regards to Michael Bisping and his place in history, I feel the same way. I was never a huge Michael Bisping fan, wasn't particularly excited to watch him fight most times, but I found myself getting caught up in the moment of it being his hometown, and then when the scorecard was read, I had the same exact feeling, which was like, I was happy for the guy, and for a matchup that I wasn't like super jazzed about just because, you know, it's like this aging Anderson Silva, and we didn't know what we were going to get, and again, never been the biggest Michael Bisping fan. I mean, within the first round, I was like, man, this is pretty cool, actually, to see these two guys finally meet up, because they have been, I mean, so Bisping entered the UFC in what year? Do you remember?
Oh, he did it with the...
The Tough Three, right?
Tough Three, yeah.
So that was quite like a while 2006, ago. Maybe, or 2007?
You're definitely way better on years than okay, me, but so, that sounds right.
Yeah, Tough One was 2005, and they come out every 6 months. But so, you know, those two guys, that's the middleweight division of the past 10 years. Has anyone been in the middleweight division for all of those 10 years besides Bisping and Silva? Machida came down from light heavyweight.
Yeah, I'm thinking off the top of my head, the only other one I can think of that might be...
Henderson left.
I was going to say Tialis Leites.
Oh, that's a good one.
Who fought earlier on the card against Gegard Mousasi. I know he fought Silva quite a while ago.
Right.
He's one of those guys.
He was one of those early... you're right.
Title
you're
shots
right.
along with Patrick Cote. Like, right. You forget that they fought him.
Cote, right. Well, is Cote 170 now?
He's at 170 now. But Leites is still 185.
Okay, so... Other than maybe a Leites, and we'll have to have the non-existent intern go and check that, I guess my point is, it's been Bisping and it's been Silva for 10 years, and they finally fought. And when they did, you know what? It was pretty cool.
It was pretty fun. Yeah. And there was that like near knockout craziness that happened in the third round.
Right. Okay, so now going to the actual match, this is the way I look at it. When they read Bisping, I go, what? No, ridiculous, because I was thinking of the fight as a whole, and it's like, look, if you look at the damage inflicted...
It's absurd. It's like 450 to 1.
Right, and if you look at... if that fight went another 4 minutes, I think Bisping was about dead.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You know, if that fight went to a non-existent sixth round, I think Silva was about to take over and win. But that being said, I went back and watched the fight the next morning, and I, you know, unbiased, whatever, just not getting caught up in the moment... I have Bisping on rounds 1 and 2, and then I think he stole the fourth because he walked Anderson Silva down. Silva was content to have his back against the wall and just try to matrix dodge punches, but he didn't really do anything.
He cost himself rounds.
He cost himself rounds. Now, his manager came out today on the MMA Hour, I think it was.
Said he wanted the rematch, right?
Well, he said he wanted the rematch in Brazil. Okay, fair enough. And you know what? Sign me up. What do I care? But he also said that apparently Anderson came back between round 1 and 2, and this sounds like a fabricated quote, but he said something along the lines of, in his best like Bruce Lee samurai impression, "Professor, I can't go on. I hurt my leg again," the same shin that he imploded against Chris Weidman.
That sounds like BS to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
You know, maybe he did.
Maybe he did. But the point being, I mean, whether he did hurt his shin in round one and that made him trigger shy or he didn't, I do think that the shin implosion against Chris Weidman from 2 years ago, it's in his head. It's not the same Anderson Silva.
No, I would say it's not the same Anderson Silva, but you know what I'll say is the other thing too. So Bisping was very vocal about if he beat Anderson Silva, it's his turn for a title shot. The one thing that I took away from that, okay, Bisping beats Anderson Silva. Do you think that Michael Bisping, even in this day and age, aged not the same Anderson Silva, do you think Michael Bisping is a better fighter than Anderson Silva?
No.
No. He's not better than him. Anderson Silva, who tries to finish Michael Bisping, or Anderson Silva, who fights, you know, balls to the wall for 5 rounds, Bisping's dead.
Yeah.
It's not even close. And I think that's the most damaging part of that for Bisping is, like, yes, he beat Anderson Silva, but if anything, I think it might have even damaged his claim for a title shot.
Well, and I also think, you know, he said after the fight, I didn't ask for a title shot because look at my face. I can't ask for a title shot. So I think he even understood that. And also, you know, you always have to look at, you can't just get a title shot. It's not something that exists in a vacuum because here's the reality of the situation. The middleweight champion right now is Luke Rockhold, who just put a freaking ass whooping on Michael Bisping about a year ago.
Not even close.
Yeah,
right?
So that's not going to happen, and I think he's realistic about that. It's a big win, good for you. But
he'd love to see Chris Weidman win the rematch because then he'd at least have some kind of interesting play there.
Agreed.
I think it would be fun to see Bisping after that win. Yeah, he could fight Anderson at a rematch, but if he's not going to fight Anderson in a rematch, I'll take him against Gegard Mousasi.
Mm-hmm. Or I thought the same thing, actually, after
because
that.
Mousasi looked good.
Mousasi beat Leites on Saturday night by decision.
And I said Musasi before. I told you last show that I thought he could be a top five guy.
And I disagreed with you.
Yeah, and I really think that, you know, while he didn't go out to finish and he didn't look really strong at certain points, I think he definitely showed that he is able to out-grapple somebody who's, like, way better at grappling than he's, you know, way better at grappling than most guys in the middleweight division. And he, like, outboxed him, too, with some, like, really, really sharp boxing. So I think Musasi showed that he was a real deal. So I'd put him against Musasi. You could see him against Anderson Silva. I'd also take him against the winner of, like, Rafael Natal and Robert Whittaker, who we had on the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert Whittaker's on a four-fight win streak. If he wins one more, you would get that British, Australian thing going on again, which
right.
everybody seems to love, with, like, tough smash. You could even run a season of the tough smashes with them as the coach. Would be kind of interesting. I know Bisping jaws all the time. Whittaker's kind of more of a quiet guy. But he said he was watching the fight. So, you know, who knows? That would be a nice matchup, too.
Well, so, and this is the way I kind of look at it. Well, first of all, I also want to say, Anderson Silva, to me, I compared it to Michael Jordan on the Wizards. It's like I'm seeing the same guy. You see flashes of it, but the points per game isn't there anymore, and that will to win isn't really there anymore.
Yeah, I don't know why... He was a killer for, like, parts of it.
Right.
He threw that flying knee. That was vintage Anderson.
That was vintage Anderson Silva. And then also the front kick to the face in round five. Why didn't he follow that up?
I forgot about the front kick to the face until you just mentioned it.
Yeah. So there was something going on there. And again, was it the shin implosion against Chris Weidman? But it's like he's queuing up the shot, but then scared to pull the trigger. I don't know what the analogy is to make, but
yeah, I don't know. He was really close to finishing him a bunch of times, and I think that's why I thought Anderson won on first watch, because, like, name a time in that fight where you were like, oh yeah, nice hit, Bisping. It was never.
He knocked him down once in the second round, but
it was kind of a trip too. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't even sure it was a knockdown.
I think if you just had one 25-minute round, we'd all be saying, nah, Silva won that fight, especially because he was winning the last 5 minutes.
Clear that Silva won that fight.
So, but this is the other thing I wanted to say, which was where you go with Silva and Bisping from here, to me, and I said this last week, the top four in the division are obviously the champ Rockhold, Weidman, who's fighting for the title in June, and then you have PED Yol and our boy Jacare.
You don't put Machida or Belfort in there?
I don't.
Oof. Those two have got to be close. For
Belfort just got ripped to shreds by Weidman, and now he's off the TRT. I feel like Belfort's just done. Can I also say Belfort's like 1-4 in title shots in his UFC career? I'm done with Belfort as a title contender.
I'm personally not a Belfort fan, but I just know that he... I mean, he has a win over the champ. Call it what it is.
So he'll probably get that because I know the Fertittas love him and Rockhold probably wants to avenge the loss. But then with like...
Well, he's got to get through Jacare first, and I don't think he'll get through Jacare.
I don't think he'll get through Jacare either. So again, I think at the top of the division, you have those four and then a huge drop-off. Because the other thing is Lyoto got his ass handed to him by Yoel Romero and he lost to Weidman.
Yeah.
And he lost to... Rockhold.
Yeah,
Lyoto's nowhere near the top right now, and I hate to say that because I love Lyoto, but my point being, you have those top four. Where you go with Silva and Bisping, as much as I enjoyed the fight on Saturday to see kind of the two division stalwarts, the legends, I kind of wouldn't mind seeing an Anderson Silva fight, I don't know, name your up-and-coming middleweight fighter, even like Derek Brunson. I'm just throwing a name out there. Or does Bisping fight, like you said, a Whittaker? I'd like to see the big names in Silva and Bisping be used as a litmus test for someone up and coming.
I mean, I would love that too, but it's just not going to happen. That's not the fight that Dana White can make money off of. Dana White's going to match him up against any name that you wanted to see him against during his prime. He's going to fight Loyola Machida. He's going to fight Vitor Belfort again. You know,
I don't think it does nothing. Machida would do something for me because we never saw it, but I don't need to see him fight Belfort again. I don't need to see him fight Henderson again. So
no, but you might get both of those.
All right.
I mean, sadly, you might get both of those.
So as far as the rest of the night, I mean, anyone else you want to maybe throw a little shout out to? We talked about Gegard. It was an impressive performance. We'll see where he goes from here. Askham had the nice KO.
I thought Askham had a nice KO. Arnold Allen looked as good as I had hyped him to. You know, 22 years old, and he took it to Yautzin Meza, who is a hell of a veteran, training out of the lab. The other one I really was super happy for, and I called this fight correctly too, is Brad Pickett. Brad Pickett said, and I even said it on the show, that I bet you if he loses, he's retirement bound. And, you know, won a split decision at home, and then at the post-fight presser said that he was retirement bound almost before the fight. So, like, huge fight that saved, like, an old fan favorite's career. I love Brad Pickett, and he fought, like, a really good fight. He had some awesome slams in that fight, which, it, like, brought back his old wrestling that he used in WEC.
It was a nice moment. Now, do you think, is that one of those things where he retires on a high note? Because I think he said if he had lost, he would retire. What do you even do with a Brad Pickett right now?
I think he's one of those guys that has to lose enough to show himself the door. And I think you're going to see him fight again. And there's, like, you know, countless matchups that are worth it for him down at that weight class. He could fight somebody like, you know, Manny Gamburian. Although I just saw Manny Gamburian got booked with John Dodson.
Oh, that's a good fight.
Yeah. Although, like, I don't know if Gambo can handle
Dodson.
Yeah,
I mean, Dodson will probably knock him the F out, but I'm there to watch it.
So fast. But, like, a nice welcome to the bantamweight division for Dodson. But somebody like Manny Gamburian, like, if Gamburian loses that fight, you could certainly match him with Pickett, and it would be, like, a fun guys who have been around kind of fight at bantamweight.
Yeah. And then the only other thing, actually, we forgot to mention this in the post-fight, Gegard called out Lyoto Machida, said he was a greaser, like, he greases his body up, so it's tough to get a hold of him, and also accused him of being on PEDs, which, I don't know. I mean, I know Lyoto drinks his own piss. I never really suspected him as a PED. PED user.
Yeah, I don't know who's on PEDs and who's not. I tend to give people the benefit of the doubt. I'm not one of those conspiracy theorists. You know, I think probably in history the only one I didn't give the benefit of the doubt to was Yoel Romero. I like instantly thought as soon as I saw him he
just
was on PEDs.
Doesn't pass the eye test.
Yeah, I mean he looks like a freak.
So that could be a future fight for Gegard.
Yeah,
after.
I mean that would be fun, and if he beat Machida, it would certainly do something for his stock, and that's like a guy who's not tied up right now with a match already. You know, like everybody else we mentioned has already got a match on hand.
And the only other, just keeping with the middleweight division, the other guy that's out there that I actually would rank if he fought, more consistently is Kennedy's in the mix too. And
I don't know the story behind that and why he's gone. I mean, I assume it's
he's busy with like outside endeavors. And then I think he was one of the more outspoken people on the Reebok thing, but they're not going to let him out of the contract because they don't want him just to walk to Bellator. So they've offered him fights, but it hasn't lined up with a schedule from what I understand.
Yeah, I'm not a big Tim Kennedy fan. I mean, like, from an in-cage standpoint, you know, like whatever he does out of the cage talking against Reebok. I know people don't like the Reebok deal. I know some people do, as we learned with Sam Alvey, but like his fighting style is not particularly fun to me to watch. So, you know, like I haven't missed him.
Yeah.
Is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you. But anyway, so the middleweight division with the Bisping win and Silva potentially back in the mix as long as he doesn't need like surgery again on that broken shin. I don't know. I guess it's pretty exciting. I almost wish they didn't book Lyoto versus Henderson because that fight does nothing for me. It didn't really do. The first one wasn't that great. I don't know why we needed a second one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They're old guys towards the end of their career. Neither one looking like they're going to make a title push anytime soon.
I even keep busy. Yeah, I mean, even just talking about it now that I realize it, I cannot believe that Lyoto has actually lost to the three of the top four in the division and kind of badly at all.
Yeah,
well, he went to a decision with Weidman, but I think Weidman has broken his hand. But I mean, Yoel Romero and Luke Rockhold dispatched of him quite easily in the span of about 3 months.
It's certainly the end of the Machida era has happened.
Mike Goldberg.
The shortest lived era. Thank you very much, Joe Rogan.
All right. With our breakdown of UFC Fight Night 84 out of the way, we can turn our attention to the massive pay-per-view this coming Saturday, the former UFC 197, now UFC 196. If you don't know the story behind that, don't ask. It is UFC 196. It will be headlined by Conor McGregor, ever heard of him, versus Nate Diaz. I do want to mention Gumby. You know, last week we were going on and on about how respectful it is and how the UFC always does the right thing by making their title fight headline the show.
Oh, we fucked up.
Yeah, and then 4 days later, here we go. McGregor's the main event, and Holm and Tate is the co-main event for the women's bantamweight title. And you know what? It just is what it is. They asked Holly Holm about it. She is like, first of all, I think Holly Holm has like the Derek Jeter effect where she will never say something incendiary or stupid to the media. She does not fall into the trap. She just said, you can put me on the first fight. You can put me on the fourth fight. I don't care.
She's a company woman.
Yeah, she's a company woman. And it just is what it is. I do think when it comes to McGregor and all he brings to the table business-wise, yeah, you know, you break some rules for McGregor.
Yeah, and I I tried to justify it at first because I remember us talking about it and being like, yeah, they're great about making sure the title fight's already always the last fight. And I tried to justify it being like, well, I mean, he has a title. And then I was like, but...
That's a good way to look at it, actually.
I mean, that's just me.
He is a champion.
That's me just trying to, like, give the UFC an excuse.
He is a champion fighting, I don't know, 25 pounds above his weight class.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, yeah, the fact that that went to 172 shocks me. I will say this before we start breaking the fight down, too. I think, and this is just a gut reaction, I think this fight sells better than RDA.
Isn't that crazy? I thought the same
you
thing,
took
actually.
The title out.
Yeah.
And it sells better.
It was title versus title, although really it was only one title on the line, but that's an awesome way to bill a fight. And then you take out that champion, and we all in the like inner MMA nerddom circle, we all know RDA and respect the hell out of him. But for the casual fan, they see that Diaz press conference, they know the shit talk that's going to happen. And I think you're right. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the final buy rate is. I'm sure it was pegged for $1 million with RDA versus Connor, but now does Diaz maybe get it to, I don't know, 1.2 or somewhere around there?
I think it could definitely do 1.2 with Diaz on there. I mean, like, the other thing about it, too, is Diaz just has that effect where you have to see his fight because you know he's going to flip somebody off or do something completely ridiculous.
One of my favorite parts of that press conference last week was when Nate Diaz gave his stock, I don't give a fuck. And then Connor just looked at him and goes, I don't give a fuck either. And it was like an I don't give a fuck off.
I also, before we completely stop talking about that press conference, because we've already mentioned it twice, the whole line,
one of my favorite press conferences in sports history.
Yeah, and the whole line where Diaz accused him of being on steroids, Connor countered with, you're going to put my name with that? Diaz was like, yeah, everybody's on steroids in the UFC. And he goes, Connor backs that up with, you mean like your two teammates, Gil Melendez and Jake Shields, who've both been caught with PEDs.
Right.
Long pause from Nate Diaz.
Got him.
And then Nate Diaz comes back with, you're on steroids. And I was like, terrible comeback, Nate. You're better than that. But it was hilarious. Yeah, it was funny. It got people excited about it. And you wouldn't have gotten that with RDA. So I think it's, I mean, I think the buy rate's going up with Diaz there.
Yeah, and just point of comparison, Aldo versus McGregor in December, and that was a year in the making. They had the whole press tour and whatnot. That did 1.2 even. So, you know, when Connor's fighting, you kind of expect somewhere around that range. Although I think the 189 versus, Mendez, you know, on short notice, I think that did about 800 or 900,000. I'll double check.
I will say
that.
While that was a little bit of a letdown that he wasn't fighting Aldo, that card too was freaking stacked.
That card was stacked. Yeah.
All right. That was one of the best fight cards of all time.
So now to the actual breakdown. And yeah, just to confirm, 825,000 for the Mendez-McGregor pay-per-view buy rate. So it'll be interesting to see what the buy rate is. But now for the actual fight. Pretty interesting. It's at 170. McGregor, of course, in his last three fights, is coming off a 13-second knockout of Jose Aldo. He knocked out Chad Mendez in the second round of their fight in July. And last January, he knocked out Dennis Seaver in Boston in the second round. Nate Diaz, on the other hand, is coming off a decision win versus Michael Johnson in December. Looked very good.
Looked
in
great.
Shape. Yeah. But then before that, a year prior, lost to Rafael Dos Anjos by decision. Dos Anjos kicked the hell out of his legs. Nate was lying on his back for most of the fight. He also looked pretty out of shape for that. And going back three fights to November 2013, he actually knocked out Gray Maynard, which was kind of a surprise in the first round. But so for Diaz, three fights in the past 3 years, what's your initial thoughts on this, Gumby?
It's difficult for me to gauge this because, like, I think if Diaz tried to grapple him and could get him down, I think Diaz has a jiu-jitsu advantage here.
Yes.
And we haven't seen much of Connor's jiu-jitsu. We've seen some of his like defensive jiu-jitsu getting off of his back against Mendez, but we haven't seen much of like how he defends submissions. And I think Diaz probably has an advantage there. I think it would be very dumb of Connor to even try to take him down. I think that Connor should try to stand with him. But that being said, the Diazes are great boxers too. So, I mean, that instantly makes this a fun fight to watch.
So just on the grappling note, I was going back on Fight Pass. They have, you know, they put up a couple of wins or signature fights from each fighter in the lead up. And I was just going back and watching some Diaz fights. And I was just reminded, I mean, his jits is sick. The Kurt Bellegrino triangle choke where he flips him off.
Well, he flexes too, right?
Yeah.
He has the muscles too, in mid mid-submission.
He, you know, guillotine choke against Melvin Gallard.
I was there when he guillotined Jim Miller in Jersey.
I was just going to say, and Jim Miller is no slouch on the ground, as they say.
I was there, and I was, like, completely shocked.
Armbar Takanori Gomi, too. I mean, this guy is no joke.
Taki Gomi's got awful grappling, for the record, though. I mean, Joe Lozon just did whatever he wanted to him recently.
But he's no joke on the ground.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And, you know, right, like you said, Connor, I mean, we saw him escape the guillotine attempt of Chad Mendes. I don't remember Holloway really throwing up many submission attempts.
Not off his back, no.
Yeah, so really it just becomes the question of, if Diaz isn't liking what's happening standing up on the feet, can he get Connor to the ground and start working some of the jits? I don't know. I'm so excited for the fight. I guess here's my other question I wanted to ask you, which is, how do you kind of, in your head, I guess, weigh the whole, Connor, for the first time, I believe, will not have a reach advantage.
Yeah, and I don't think that matters too much, because the one thing I will say about Nate Diaz versus Nick Diaz is, while he does have good boxing, his ability to move in and out of range is not as good as Nick's. So Nick is much better about getting in and getting out and not eating a punch in the process, you know, backing people down to the cage and hitting him against the cage. Nate is not going to back Conor McGregor back to a cage.
Right.
You know, first of all, because Conor has got that wide stance and he knows how to circle away really well. And second of
all,
he's
got a movement coach, I tell you.
Ido Portell, yeah. We all know about Ido Portell. John Kavanaugh gets a question about him like every 15 minutes on Twitter. So Ido Portell, keeping him with his movement training, he circles out really well. He is better at using range than Nate Diaz is. And that's tricky to say, because, you know, he's still a Diaz brother. He's still got that Diaz brother boxing. But I definitely think that this is Conor McGregor's fight from a boxing standpoint. And I think he's going to win a striking battle here. He said he'll knock him out in the first. You know, I tend to agree with that. Just because Diaz is, like I said, he's going to eat more punches. And there haven't been a lot of people who have eaten a bunch of Connor's punches and still felt good in the morning. So,
And it's worth noting that Josh Thompson did knock out Diaz back in 2013 as well.
Big head kick, yeah. And he's off to Bellator now.
And I think that's the first TKO loss of Diaz's career.
Yeah.
Also, I think both Diaz's are pretty well known. They don't like to check leg kicks.
Yeah, and
Connor, yeah.
Well, and then John Kavanaugh is just one of the best in the world at breaking down fights, and he is going to see that. And when Diaz is not getting the best of the boxing, like he said, like, I'm telling you, he's not going to. You know, he's going to be losing a boxing battle. If he changes his mind and is like, okay, well, it's time to grapple with him and let's see what his jiu-jitsu defense is, by the time that happens, his front leg is going to be so dead,
there isn't
a shot at a takedown. There isn't a single shot. So I'm saying McGregor knockout, if not the first round, the second round.
All right. And if you are a gambling man or woman, -420 for Connor seems to be the most common line. Nate Diaz, +375 dog in most books.
And I don't think it's even worth a play, like almost 4-1 for Diaz.
I'm interested to see if the odds on Diaz by submission, I don't think they'll be like fantastic, but I'd throw down $20 on
Diaz.
Yeah,
you could probably get like 6-1 on that,
something like that. Yeah.
It might be worth a play in case Connor did like a dumb shoot and got caught in a guillotine or something.
All right. Now moving to the co-main event, the actual title fight of the card, we have Holly Holm, the Queen Slayer, the Ronda Slayer, the woman who beat Ronda Rousey, against Misha Tate, another old Ronda Rousey rival. Holly Holm, of course, the champion. Misha Tate will have her second crack at the UFC bantamweight title. Now, Holly Holm is 3-0 in the UFC. She obviously beat Ronda Rousey, second round head kick and strikes on the ground in Melbourne, Australia in November. She also beat Marion Renault and Raquel Pennington by decision. Misha Tate, since her loss to Ronda Rousey, has reeled off 4 wins in a row, beat Liz Carmouche by unanimous decision, beat Rin Nakai in Japan by unanimous decision, beat Sarah McMahon by decision, and beat Jessica Ai this past July by decision. How do you see this one playing out?
So that win over Jessica Ai that you just mentioned is the reason I'm easily picking Holly Holm. So if you watch that fight with Jessica Ai, over the first round, Jessica Ai tagged Misha Tate so many times that I thought we were going to get a Jessica Ai win. And I was really excited about it because I thought it was going to bring freshness to the division, which Holly Holm then did later anyway. Because I was like, Ronda needs a new opponent. I thought Jessica Eye could be it because she was tagging Misha. And I was like, man, this girl's boxing is for real.
Jessica Eye is a really good boxer.
Yeah, and she was a really good boxer, but she tired when Misha shot a bunch of takedowns. So Misha started grappling her a little bit. She tired out. Then Misha's hands started landing. That being said, Misha didn't land until her opponent was tired. You know, Holly Holm's gas tank is amazing. If you've seen any of her three-round fights, I mean, her three-round fight, she looks as good as she does in the last 30 seconds as she did in the first 30 seconds. And that being said, too, if she tags Holm, or if she tags Tate like Jessica Eye tagged Tate, it's, you know, Tate's not going to be standing up. You know, like, I hit her and knocked her down. Tate's going to hit her and her head's going to land in the third row.
Holm's
like,
going to hit her.
Or Holm's going to hit her. Yeah. Thank you. Holm's going to hit her and her head's going to land in the third row.
So I think I said this in our first episode. The thing I was interested in this matchup, though, was we saw how much trouble Ronda had in the clinch against Holly and getting her down via traditional judo means, as Ronda Rousey has been known to do. I'm curious because Misha has the double leg, the single leg, the wrestling and grappling skill in a traditional sense that maybe Ronda does not, because Ronda's more judo-based. I am curious to see how Misha can try to get home to the ground and make it like a dog fight or a grappling fight.
I mean, I hear that too, but part of what stopped Ronda from getting those takedowns too was that Holm was really good at getting underhooks. And I mean, like, if she's really good at getting underhooks on judo people trying to get body clinches and stuff like that, I would stand to reason that she's probably got a pretty good sprawl, too, with underhooks there as well. You know, I would think that she's pretty much able to stop those. But I could be wrong. I mean, I could, you know, Tate could shoot a double leg and score it right away. I just don't see it happening. I can't imagine, from what I know of Holly Holm, the athlete, that Misha Tate's the type of person who can take her down and dominate her from the top.
And if you go to Fight Metric, just to back up your point, they do not have Holly Holm being taken down ever in the UFC. I thought there was one point in the Ronda match. Well, actually, you know what? Holly Holm ended up on top of Ronda in a weird kind of takedown. So, okay, fair enough. So your prediction is Holly Holm via the fist in a TKO, or is this going to be a decision win?
I'm going to say she's going to hit her with a TKO first round.
And first round?
I'm going to say first round.
That's bold.
I'm telling you, I hit Tate and stunned her. So I hit
Tate. I thought you were saying you hit Tate.
Jessica, I hit Tate.
It's like, when did you?
I didn't stun. I didn't stun Misha Tate.
And you punched her?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't. I don't think that would end well for me. I'm a pretty good grappler, but I still don't like my chances against a professional MMA fighter. So I hit her in the first round and stunned her. You mean to tell me that if Holm isn't going to get that opening in the first round, you think she's shored up her striking that much? I mean, Holm is a different kind of striker than Jessica I. This ends quickly and badly for Misha Tate.
Okay, that's interesting. I'll be interested to see what the over-under is. I'm trying to find it right now.
I bet you it's 1.5.
I would take the over on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Nope.
Okay. Well, Holly Holm is about a -350 favorite. Misha Tate, the +300 dog in most sports books. Moving on, we have Gian Vellante. He is a Sara Longo product, light heavyweight, against Ayer Latifi. Gian Vellante is coming off a win over Anthony Perosh, KO in the first round. He is 2-1 in his last three fights, a loss to Tom Lawler via KO, and then he also knocked out Corey Anderson. Latifi is also 2-1 in his last three. He's coming off a KO over Sean O'Connell, and if you go back one fight before that, a KO over Hans Stringer. He lost to John Blankowitz via KO. So these guys, they're either going to knock you out or get knocked out. Do you expect anything but a knockout in this fight?
No, and I love it. So this card not filled with name value after those first two fights, you'll notice. I mean, Gian Vellante and Ilir Latifi, not like household names. But that being said, I'm a big Ilir Latifi fan. And
his nickname's the Sledgehammer. Yeah, could you not be?
I mean, and if you look at him, too, he's just like a menacing-looking dude. I mean, big, bald guy with, like, you know, mean Swedish facial hair. Yeah, he's very intimidating-looking. Google a picture of him if you don't know Ilir Latifi. And that O'Connell knockout was in Boston.
Only a month ago, actually. Yeah, it's a short notice. Yeah, short turnaround.
Short turnaround. And, you know, I think that this is just geared up for another Latifi win, a big one. And I know you like the New York guys, but Volante is not going to stop Latifi's takedown. You might see this from like ground and pound TKO. Or you might, I mean, Latifi's stand-up has gotten way better too, as we've seen. And Volante's is good, but I mean, he got tagged by a much smaller Tom Lawler.
Yeah, I'm excited about this fight because I do agree it's just the battle of fists and someone's going to get tagged in the face and it'll be fun. But I guess it's also worth noting here, Gumby, by the way, Volante is actually the plus 175 dog. Latifi about a minus 200 favorite. But it is worth noting, third card from the top, right before the co-main event, this card is a two-fight card.
Yeah, I mean it is, but I also think, so this card did the opposite of what Bellator did. So Bellator had those like god awful fights at the top that got you to watch, but then didn't stack the card underneath it. So this put really great fights at the top, and they gave you fights that I think are going to be highly entertaining under it. Like, you're going to see a knockout in this fight. I think all three of those last three fights are going to be knockouts. And before it, you have Tom Lawler, right? Tom Lawler's the fourth to the top.
I was just going to get to that.
Yeah,
so.
And Tom Lawler is never in a boring fight. He's so fun to watch. And he's got a weird walkout every time. Comes out looking like Apollo Creed one time.
So we'll go right to it. Tom Lawler, 2-1 in his last three fights. Just knocked out Gian Volante, who we just talked about in the fight previous. Also submitted Michael Culper and lost to Francis Carmont. But he will be fighting Corey Beeston 25-8 Anderson. It used to be Beeston 24-7, no?
I think it was always
25-8. Oh, was it always 25-8? Yeah, I thought maybe he upgraded himself after a win.
Maybe. I don't know. 25-8 is... Sorry if you're listening, Corey Anderson. You need a different nickname. 24-7 would be cool. 25-8 meaning you just like one extra hour, one extra day, I guess. It's not clever to me. That being said, let's get to actual fight
so
talk.
He's 2-1 in his last three, if I didn't say that already. Coming off a decision win over Fabio Maldonado, beat Jan Blankowicz by decision before that, and lost to, also talked about in the fight previous, Gian Volante via KO. How do you see Tom Lawler versus Corey Anderson going?
I mean, weird style matchup, because Anderson will box with you, but he's got pretty good wrestling. He's actually one of the few prospects at 205 that's like has been looking up as of late. You know, we've talked about that in the past. Not a whole lot of prospects at 205 or 265. But he's made a little name for himself after getting off the Ultimate Fighter. My gut wants to pick Tom Lawler every time he fights, just because he's so goddamn entertaining. You know, like, I love every single time he fights, whether it's, you know, paint just bleed on his chest or, you know, doing weird things at the weigh-ins. I just want to see him win all the time because I think he's a genuinely good dude and he's funny as hell. So I'm going to go a little bit with my heart here. I'm going to say Tom Lawler again in like a gritty 3-round, just brutal, bloody war, because neither of them are going to be able to knock each other out.
All right. I like it. Well, Corey Anderson is the minus 300 favorite. Lawler, the plus 250, as low as 220 dog in most sports books.
So he's definitely a live dog there too. 250 is definitely a high number for me on him, because I do think he definitely should be the underdog, because Anderson could wrestle him for 3 rounds if he wanted to. But I think Anderson's willingness to box sometimes could get him caught and could make that like an easy money fight.
Yeah, so maybe something to throw into a parlay. All right, and then to the opening of the main card, fun fight in my opinion, Amanda Nunes versus Valentina Shevchenko.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Nunes is coming off a big win over Sarah McMahon, a submission in the first round. Before that, she KO'd Shayna Baszler, and then she was actually Kat Zingano's lead-up fight to her title shot, to Kat Zingano's title shot, in which she was winning the first round, was Nunes, and then Zingano came back to KO her in the third. Nunes was once thought of as a potential Ronda Rousey challenger. She will look to make it 3 in a row against Shevchenko. Shevchenko, UFC debut against Sarah Kaufman, took a split decision win back in December. What are your thoughts, Gumby?
So I think Shevchenko, let me guess. So you've got the numbers over there on the fight card. I'm guessing Shevchenko, slight favorite. 180, negative 180?
Actually, no. Amanda Nunes, minus 155.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, so
and Shevchenko, just a very slight underdog at plus 125.
Okay, I was going to guess Shevchenko being a favorite because people got so intrigued by her hands recently. Because she did look good against Kaufman, which I was surprised by. I mean, I had Kaufman, you know, as a heavy favorite because Shevchenko kind of walked in there late notice and pulled out the win. But I will say that I do like Nunes in this fight. You know, like you said, she was beating Kat Zingano, who I miss watching fight because Kat Zingano was so fun.
Where have you gone, Kat Zingano? Can we get a milk carton with a missing Kat Zingano? I think she's training in Thailand, which is kind of, I mean, hey, that sounds like fun. But ever since the Ronda Rousey 14-second loss, she has not been seen of or heard from or has a scheduled fight.
Yeah, and I know she had a bunch of shit leading up to that fight, too, that was, like, hard in her life. I mean, her husband died, correct?
Right, her husband and coach, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Died. And, like, you know, so that had to have been a very emotionally draining time. So maybe going to Thailand and, like, clearing your head is good. Plus, I mean, if you get her some, like, high-level Muay Thai, too.
It's kind of scary.
Oh, she's already got great
and
knees.
And she was one of my favorite fighters in that women's bantamweight division, so I just can't wait to see her come back.
She's still one of my favorite fighters in that women's
bantamweight. I mean, her and Holm could be a fun fight.
Oh, God, I would watch her and Holm in a second. Because just, you know, the possibility of Holm having somebody who would box with her and possibly give her a show. I mean, like, could you imagine Zingano getting in the clinch there and not trying to take her down, but being willing to shoot knees to her chest or something like that, or knees to her gut, or...
Take my money now.
Yeah, I would watch that. So I'm going to say on this one that I like, to get back to the fight, I like Nunes because the ability for a takedown here. You know, Kaufman does have good wrestling, but, you know, notoriously, like, sometimes her cardio kicks out on her a little bit. And I think, you know, she was close to beating Shevchenko, and I think Nunes is better than her. So I'll go with Nunes. I don't know if it'll be a submission or a decision, but, you know, safe money decision here.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think, I mean, I only saw Shevchenko in the one fight in December, but I've been very high on Nunes ever since really the Zingano fight. You know, I thought that was a really gritty fight either way. She got knocked out in the third, but she was controlling and winning the fight for me up until that third round. And she's been very impressive ever since. So I agree with you on the Nunes play there. All right. So that takes care of the main card, Gumby. And now we will transition. You got to catch up with two Titan FC fighters. And if you're unfamiliar with Titan FC, it is a smaller promotion that will have a show this coming Friday night.
It's a nice little warm-up for your main course, so to speak, on the weekend. Titan FC, one of my favorite smaller promotions. You know, I know, like, if you're getting into MMA to become a diehard and you're, like, trying to expand off of the UFC, you know, Bellator probably just turned you off a little bit. World Series of Fighting doesn't happen often enough. And when it does, sometimes their cards are a little on the watered downside, depending on name value. One thing you can always expect from Titan FC is Titan FC always brings name value to the table.
And it's on Fight Pass.
And it's on Fight Pass, too, so you don't even have to go out of your way to watch it. You know, like Bellator, you might not have Spike TV. I don't have Spike TV anymore, so you might not have Spike TV. You know, World Series of Fighting is on NBC Sports, which I know some people don't have. You know, CES MMA is on Axis TV or RFA or Legacy. They're all on Axis TV. This you probably already have access to, which is awesome. So it's one of those things that you already have access to. And like I said, there's tons of name value. One of the two interviews you're about to hear is with Steven Seeler, who was a UFC fighter for a really long time. I believe he was 4-4 in the UFC. He knocked out Mike Brown in an awesome fight in Boston. And you're going to see him fight Andre Harrison, who is the title holder in Titan. He's beaten Bellator veterans in the past. He beat Dez Green. So that you've got some name value there. And, you know, like I said, the company has got good name value. They've got Pat Healy on that card, correct?
Yeah, former UFC fighter,
former
Pat Healy.
Former UFC fighter, former Strikeforce, I believe, title challenger. He fought Gil Melendez for the title in Strikeforce, if I'm not mistaken. You know, they've just got some, like, really awesome, like, guys that you probably forgot are still fighting, and you should catch up on it. So, Titan, really fun card to watch, and you're going to hear these two who are fighting each other for the title on Friday in an interview.
All right, so Gumby catches up with Steven Seeler and Andre Harrison. These interviews are brought to you by New England Submission Fighting. New England Submission Fighting, a mixed martial arts gym in Amherst, Massachusetts, the oldest MMA gym in Massachusetts, going strong since 1993, classes 6 days a week. If you go to one of the local colleges, and there are a lot of them, it is well worth your time to maybe have your first introduction to MMA at New England Submission Fighting.
And even if you're not into MMA, you can get Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with the Gi on, They excel in no-gi jiu-jitsu. There's some other stand-up kickboxing classes and stand-up for MMA classes with Kirik Jeunesse. So just like high-level stuff all the time, and they've got whatever it is you're looking for. So head on over.
All right. So these interviews are brought to you by New England Submission Fighting. You can check out the website Amherst MMA. That's AmherstMMA.com. This is Gumby catching up with Steven Sealer and Andre Harrison.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland with Top Turtle MMA. I am here with Andre Harrison, who headlines Titan FC 37 against Steven Sealer. That's March 4th on UFC Fight Pass. Andre, we actually talked back in 2014, right before you made your Titan debut, and you talked a little bit about what your goals were upon entering the organization. How have your goals changed now that you're 4-0 in the company and their champion?
I think my goals changed, you know, as far as me wanting to put on more dominant performances. So, like, I'm trying to go in there. I know a lot of people have been, critiquing me, saying that I don't have as many finishes or things like that. So, probably try and go in there and up my finishing rate.
And do you have any aspirations to fight outside of Titan, or are they just treating you so well right now you want to stick right there?
I definitely want to, move up fighting the UFC. I mean, I think that's pretty much the goal of everybody.
Yeah, and does fighting on Fight Pass, you think, help out that exposure piece?
Yeah, because, I mean, fighting on Fight Pass, I feel like the right people, see us, the people that would be able to get us up to the next level. So I think it definitely helps.
We've got Steven Sealer later on this very show. He is a well-noted grappler. He's got some, very slick transitions. He's got a 14 submissions to his name. You're a guy who shoots a lot of takedowns. Does the fact that he's so good on the ground affect your game plan at all?
No, I mean, I don't really try and focus too much on other people's, strengths and all that stuff. I try and make people fight more to my game plan as opposed to me trying to fight to theirs. Because I feel like if you have to make an adjustment to somebody, you're already at a loss. He should have to make an adjustment to me. I mean, I train just hard all the time anyway. So, as far as just trying to up it just for him, no, I'm not trying to up it just for him. I'm trying to, get better overall on the ground,
Yeah, and you beat a pretty well-noted grappler in the match before. You beat Dez Green to defend your title. Do you think Sealer's ground game is much different than Green's?
Oh yeah, those are apples and oranges. I mean, Desi's more of a wrestler. I feel like he gets you to the ground. He's looking the ground and pound you. Not saying that Steven won't look the ground and pound you, but as far as Steven Sealer, I feel like he gets you to the ground. It's a combination of the both. He's looking to hit you. If he can cut you, he'll cut you. If you panic and he can get the submission, he'll go for it.
So almost like a more well-rounded Dez Green in that sense. Do you think that having him around is a bigger name opponent than Dez Green, or does it do more for your career, or are you just worried about finishing fights?
No, I think it's definitely it might be a more noted victory than Desi, only because Steven's been in the UFC before. He he's done well. He's fought some real, real good fights there. So I feel like it is a bigger name. Desi, I know he fought in Bellator prior too, but obviously the UFC is the number one. So fighting there give you more of give you a bigger name than, Bellator would.
We talked a little bit before we officially came on air here. You got a couple of your training partners hitting the bags behind you. Are there advantages to fighting on the same card the same day as some of your training partners, or do you find that to be give you less focus from the coaches directly?
I'm not. It's definitely an advantage, only because everybody's in fight camp at the same time. So, everybody's sharp and on their A game. You're not getting guys that only going to be good for a round or a half a round. You're getting guys that are coming in, they're in shape, and they're ready to go because they're competing as well. So, definitely makes for a real, real tough, solid camp.
Yep, awesome. And so just kind of to wrap up here really quick, why should people tune in to Fight Pass March 4th to see this fight particularly?
Fireworks, man. This is going to be fireworks. Definitely, I mean, this is going to be something people not going to want to miss. Good action coming up. Overall, top to bottom, the whole card, not just my fight alone, but it's going to be some real talented fights there.
And do you have a prediction for us?
Me get my hand raised. I don't know how yet. I just know I'm going to get my hand raised.
All right. Sounds good. Well, Andre, thank you for taking the time to stop and talk with us. Best of luck in your fight.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with Steven Seeler. Steven headlines Titan Fighting 37 against Andre Harrison on March 4th, which is on UFC Fight Pass. Steven, I talked to you back in December of 2014 before you made your debut at Titan Fighting. And you said at that time that your only goal was get back to the UFC. It's over a year later. You've got 5 straight wins. Has that goal changed it all for you?
No, not at all. It's always going to be the goal. You know, I figure, you know, UFC is the top of the mountain, and that's where I want to be. So, you know, that's always going to be the goal for me when I'm fighting.
So you took 5 fights all in 2015, all 5 wins, all, I believe, 4 out of 5 finishes. Was the goal for that year just to fight as much as possible to get noticed again, or was that just more like it aligned the right way?
No, that's always been my goal, fight as much as possible. I always like being active, and so I try to make sure I fight as much as possible, and especially knowing that, you know, I needed the wins to get back to where I wanted to be. You know, I took fights. I didn't care what the weight was. I just took as many fights as possible, and I just tried to rack up the wins.
Yep, and you did that quite a bit in the UFC, too. You know, you're a relatively young guy, had 9 fights in the UFC. Was that, again, just a case of, you know, sign me up for the next one whenever it happens?
You know, yeah, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, my entire career to never really have a serious injury. And so, you know, being a fighter, I want to fight. I don't like just picking and choosing who I get to fight. Whoever they tell me they want me to fight at that time, I'm going to take it. And because, you know, why else would you be into fighting other than loving to fight?
You said that your goal is to get back to the UFC. Do you think that a win over Andre Harrison gets you there?
I believe it should. I don't know why it wouldn't. You know, being 5 in a row, or that'd make it 6 in a row. My only loss out of the UFC was for that Titan title.
And that
I figure.
Let's go on record too, saying that was a weird fight. So I was at that fight, cage side. I think something like 9 groin strikes in that fight.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I think the couple that I got, Dez, I think he was just looking to get a break. If you actually watch it, they were actually inside leg kick. They didn't land on the groin, but he was pretty tired, so I think he wanted to take the break. He nailed me pretty good where I couldn't even walk for 3 days. That last one was a straight knee up in the groin where, you know, if there was any more time left in the clock, I probably would have just stopped the fight because I couldn't even walk.
Yeah, that one was up against the cage, correct?
Correct, and that was a very, like, there was 30 seconds left in the fight, and I don't exactly wear the biggest cuff, so it doesn't exactly cover everything, so yeah, that was painful, and I couldn't walk for quite some time after that one.
With all the signings that the UFC has done recently, you know, obviously they went out and signed huge news item, professional wrestler, CM Punk, they fought a 0-0 fighter recently. Do you feel like you need to do more to promote yourself, or do you feel like this is just the way things are going, that they're going to continue hiring people like this?
Well, the reason why they signed the 0-0 fighter is the same thing as CM Punk, because they're trying to get CM Punk a fight. I don't really think they're going in that direction other than just doing CM Punk a favor, because he is going to be a huge name. I don't know about the fighter. He is a huge name. He's not going to, but he is a huge name, has a huge wrestling fan base. Even I am a huge fan of WWE and I've always watched CM Punk. I even went to a Royal Rumble just to watch CM Punk fight The Rock. So, you know, that's always exciting to have him there. But, you know, I don't think they're doing a lot of the weird signings other than, you know, Sage Northcutt and a couple other younger kids that they're trying to build up.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about your upcoming fight. So, Andre Harrison, he poses a lot of the same threats as Dez Green did when you fought him. He's got kind of that wrestling heavy style. Do you think that your style works particularly well for that wrestling heavy style?
No, actually, I think that's the downfall of my career so far has been the wrestling. So, you know, hopefully, you know, I'm able for this fight to create some more scrambles and make it more of a fight where I'm able to make it more, you know, get them tired, get my stand-up going on, and, you know, kind of make it at my pace.
And have you mixed up anything in your camp to work on that kind of stuff?
Not anything different really than the last, you know, few fights. You know, I've always been trying to get my wrestling back to where it needs to be. And I think other than, you know, knowing that I could take risks in this fight and not have to worry about losing, you know, I don't got to worry about winning or losing this fight. I just got to have fun and enjoy it and take some risks. I'm like I did with Dez's fight where I just kind of played it safe, hoping the referee would separate us whenever, you know, Dez was just trying to hold me. I just kind of stood there. Now I know I need to take some risks, get off the cage, and even if I put myself in a bad position, I just get out and get on top and, you know, control the cage.
And is that – you're still working at the pit with that?
For the most part, you know, the gym's actually shutting down here in the next 2 weeks, the gym in Utah. We had some owners get divorced, and now the gym's closing down, and now me and Cord trying to, you know, find somewhere else to kind of go work at. But that's after the fight. You know, they're open till the day I leave for Titan Fight, so we'll worry about it after what happens.
And has there been any other place you've been training with all of that going on to kind of, like, test out the waters, or have you just been focused on, you know, Andre Harrison March 4th?
You know, we've been working out at a few other gyms. Absolute MMA, that's about 45 minutes north of us. You know, I've been doing that for the last 3-4 fights anyways. Just because, you know, just get a different mixture of stand-up guys and sparring. But for the most part, it's just been really just me and Court working out every day, and that's probably how it's going to stay. We also have, you know, Ramsey Nijem coming on occasion, and then my roommate, Brock Jardine, who's also in the UFC for a little bit.
I know you're usually a pretty humble guy when you're in interviews, but do you have a prediction for how this fight with Andre Harrison goes?
You know, I think it has to be a finish, you know. If it goes the distance, it's probably Andre out-wrestling me, so I'm hoping to either knock him out or submit him. I don't care what way it happens. Just I know that's what I got to do to get back to the UFC and get the eyes back on me, so... I'm gonna call a finish, and I don't care what it is, though.
And yeah, and people definitely sleep on your hands, too. I'll always remember the Mike Brown knockout, which seemingly everybody thought that was a jiu-jitsu match all lined up, and it turned into a 50-second boxing match. So just to kind of close this out here, too, you know, give us one more reason why we should tune in on March 4th to Fight Pass and see this title fight.
No, this is going to be an exciting fight. Andre's undefeated. You know, he's definitely UFC ready. You know, I think if he would have just had a finish by now, UFC would have already signed him because he's that good. And I've, you know, been to the UFC, been there, showed how good I am. I have a winning record in the UFC. And plus, I'm on a huge win streak as well. I think we're both just going to bring the fight, and I think we're going to steal the show that night.
Well, we certainly look forward to it. Steven, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, so there you have it. I think you heard from both guys that they both want, Sealer, in his case, he wants back in the UFC, and Harrison wants in the UFC for the first time.
Yeah,
and it's on Fight Pass.
Yeah,
so.
They're probably not that far away. I know what's holding Harrison back. He's 11-0. I think what's holding him back is, like Sealer said in Sealer's interview, Harrison just hasn't had that, like, exciting finish yet. And, you know, maybe with an exciting finish of Sealer, he could get that. Sealer, I think, is probably, no matter how he wins this fight, could be back, because he's on a 4 or 5 fight win streak since his last loss in Titan. He's fought for a bunch of other promotions. He fought anytime, anywhere to make sure that he could get back as quick as possible. And I think this one might do it. He's a really fun fighter to watch, and he had success in the UFC. So it'll be interesting to see. You should definitely tune in if you weren't planning on it Friday night and catch. I think there's 3 title fights on that card.
It could be a fun warm-up to 196.
Great warm-up.
All right, so speaking of exciting finishes, we will move now to the prelims of 196. These are the 4 main fights on FS1, kicking off at 8 p.m. And speaking of exciting finishes, you have our guy, Brandon Thatch, fighting C.R.
Bahadurzada.
Bahadurzada.
Yeah. At least that's what I'm going to go with.
So Thatch is known as one of the more exciting fighters in the 170-pound division. He's 2-2 in the UFC. Awesome KOs over Paulo Thiago and Justin Edwards, but then two submission losses in a row to Benson Henderson and Gunnar Nelson. And really, to call the Gunnar Nelson a submission loss, you have to do the footnote that Gunnar Nelson just clocked him in the face to get him to the ground.
Great punching power from Gunnar Nelson, which was surprising.
Very surprising, because I think everyone thought Thatch would outwork him on his feet. So Thatch coming off two losses in a row, he will fight CR. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the last name.
CR's been on a long hiatus too, right?
He has. The last time he fought was December of 2013, which was a loss to Doomsday Howard. Before that, he lost to Dong Young Kim. His only win in the UFC, and he has this in common over Brandon Thatch, is he has a KO win over Paulo Thiago. What are your thoughts on this?
So he's got really good punching power. I know that time away, too, was spent... I believe he was doing some charity or some like work with refugees.
What a nice guy.
Yeah, I asked him if I could get an interview to talk about it, and he didn't even want it mentioned. He was like, no, don't cover
it. And you
this.
Just mentioned it.
And I did just mention it because, you know, I think people
don't
should,
tell Gumby secrets.
Yeah. I think that people should know, too, that like he stepped away from the sport not to like clear his head or not to do this, but because he wanted to use what he had as a platform to do something really great.
Sure.
He just didn't want to put it in it like a long interview, you know, on our webpage or anything like that. But the fact that he does have good punching power makes this a really intriguing fight. I think what tips the scales in Thatch's way is Thatch is huge, right? He is like a
very
big
170 pounder.
I mean, when I saw him fight Benson Henderson, I was like, Benson Henderson looks three weight classes smaller than this guy. And he uses his legs really well. And I think that's going to be the difference against CR, is that CR has got a good overhand right that knocks people out. Thatcher's got a whole bunch of things that help him knock people out, and he uses distance really well, and he uses his legs really well. So I would expect this is definitely a knockout fight. Definitely bet on knockout in this one, and I'm going to go Thatch.
All right, fair enough. Then moving to another welterweight offering, we have Eric Silva, who is 2-1 in his last three, coming off a decision loss to Neil Magny. But before that, he submitted Josh Koscheck, submitted Mike Rhodes, and before that, if you want to go one fight, peel the onion back one fight further, he had a KO loss to Matt Brown, which was actually a main event back in 2014. He will be fighting Nordine Taleb. Nordine Taleb coming off a submission loss via guillotine to Warley Alves. But before that, he had a win over Chris Clements by decision and a win over Jinlang Li by decision. So he's also 2-1 in his last three. What are your thoughts, Gumby?
So this one's really tricky for me, because Eric Silva came into the UFC and everybody's like, Eric Silva, next big prospect at welterweight. And he is one of the most bipolar fighters I've seen in the UFC. He looks so good when he looks good, and he looks so bad when he looks bad. So, like, you know, I don't know which way to lean this way. He's a favorite, right?
He is the minus 220 favorite, and Nordine is the plus 180 dog. And I also just want to go back one step, because I failed to mention it. Thatch is a very heavy favorite. He's at minus 310 in most sports books over CR, who's a plus 255 dog. But anyway, back to Silva and Taleb.
Yeah, so, and Taleb is I'd say he's better than Silva when Silva's on a bad day, and worse than Silva when Silva's on a good day.
I might need to take out a pen and a piece of paper to add all that up, but I think I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, like, so if Silva has a really bad day, Taleb is going to beat him because he looks so bad when he's bad. But I would say Silva's grappling game here, which I think is going to come into play, could submit Taleb, and I'm going to bank on him having a good day, because, you know, like, betting on somebody having their worst day is a really bad way to go.
And I'll also say, too, Silva's one of those eye test guys where he looked like a really jacked dude a couple of years ago, and I think he looked rather thin his last fight since the USADA testing, if I'm not mistaken. And we're kind of in an era right now between the no IVs on weight cutting and now increased steroid testing via USADA. Some of these guys, you just don't really know what you're going to get. We might be seeing different fighters. I'm not saying Silva's on PEDs or anything like that, but it's something just to kind of keep an eye on.
Yeah, even if you leave the PED stuff out of it and you're just talking weight cut.
He was a bigger 170.
Yeah, he's probably got to lose a little bit of bulk, so it's easier for him to make it. And, I mean, losing to Neil Magny, no shame in that.
No.
But I'll go Silva submission.
All right, fair enough. Moving on, we have Vitor Miranda versus Marcelo
Guimarães.
Guimarães, thank you for that.
No problem.
Vitor Miranda is 2-1 in his last three, coming off two knockouts over Clint Hester and Jay Collier. Marcelo is 2-1 himself in his last three. He's coming off a split decision win over Andy Enns, but before that, a loss to Hun Gyu Lim via TKO, and he also has a win over Dan Stichen via split decision. Your thoughts?
So Lim, again, should be mentioned, is no joke. He's the one who had that phenomenal main event with, was it Matt Brown in Asia? I'm trying to remember.
Did Matt Brown fight in Asia?
I can't remember who Lim fought. Lim fought in an amazing main event. Anyway,
I'll look it up.
So not a bad loss for Guimarães, but Vitor Miranda, crazy punching power. I'm a big Clint Hester fan who he knocked out. And when he knocked out Clint Hester, instantly my first thoughts were, this guy's for real.
Oh, Lim beat Safadin in Singapore.
Oh, yeah.
Lost to Safadin.
Brown. My bad on that one. But it was an amazing fight. It was like one of my favorite, most under the radar fights. Anyway, back to the match. I really like Miranda in this one because of his punching power. I mean, Clint Hester is a great boxer. He's got a bunch of former boxing wins on his record. And I think Miranda takes this one with his punching power.
Miranda, the -300 favorite.
I guess I'm going all favorites today, except for Tom Lawler.
That's the way it probably should be, right?
Yeah. So they're big favorites too. So I mean, kind of a hard card to bet.
Guimarães is a +250 dog in most sports books. All right, moving on. This fight should kick off the FS1 prelims. It's going to be our guy, Chaz Skelly from Team Takedown, fighting Darren Elkins. Elkins, a takedown machine. He's coming off a win over Robert Whiteford and then a loss to Hasran Diaz before that. He's 2-1 in his last three overall. Skelly is on a 4-fight win streak. You can read about it on my article on MMA Manifesto, Under the Radar Win Streaks. He beat Edmilson Sousa by submission, Jim Allers by KO, decision win over Sean Soriano, and a submission to got a submission over Tom Ninamaki. And this was all after a decision loss in Mirsad Bektik's UFC debut. Your thoughts, Gumby?
Yeah, I think, like you said, Darren Elkins is a takedown machine. He's run into the wrong guy to try to take down. Chaz Skelly, great prospect, awesome guy. We got the chance to interview him a couple of weeks ago. You know, just a phenomenal dude, and he's great at takedowns and takedown defense, working at, ironically enough, Team Takedown. And, you know, he's been traveling around, getting some extra training in, and I think it's going to pay off. If Elkins can't take him down, this is Skelly's fight all day. I expect this to be a gritty fight, though, because both of them are such gritty dudes and tough, you know, strong dudes. And I'll give a decision here to Skelly. Yeah, right. I think Skelly by decision is
Elkins the very slight favorite at the very slight dog, 125. Skelly the slight favorite, about 140 in most sports
books. It's not very common to see the ranked guy as the underdog either.
That's
the
true.
Unranked
that's a good
guy
point.
Is
yeah.
the favorite. So that's just really showing how underrated Chaz Skelly is. Not that I put anything into the UFC rankings.
All right. Moving on to the actual Fight Pass prelims, we will start the night with Julian Arosa, Juicy J, his nickname, versus Terutu Ishihara. Ishihara is coming off a split decision to Mitsuta Hirata.
Yeah, split decision draw.
Split decision draw, right. So it was
one judge for Hirata, one judge for Ishihara, one judge is a draw.
Draw. And then Julian Arosa coming off a win at the Ultimate Fighter 22 finale over Marcin Wersik, the Polish zombie.
Yeah,
right?
The Polish zombie.
What are your thoughts?
So, I wasn't on the series of the Ultimate Fighter. I wasn't a big Juicy J fan. I didn't really think Arosa was all that impressive. But with a full fight camp under his belt to take it to the Polish zombie like that was pretty impressive, because Rosick's got some pretty impressive wins on his resume if you look through it. Ishihara is good. That fight against Hirota, I had it scored for Hirota, which is sort of why I'm going to lean Juicy J on this one. I think, you know, you also have to count in the travel time, too. You know, it's always harder for an Asian fighter to come over and fight, you know, 12 time zones away.
Arosa, -240 favorite, yep. And Ishihara, +200 dog. Moving on, Jason Sago. This is at lightweight. Jason Sago will be fighting Justin Salas. Salas is 1-2 in his last three, coming off a KO loss to Joe Proctor. Sago is 1-1 in the UFC. He lost to Paul Felder, no shame in that, back in October of 2014. So a bit of a long layoff for him. What do you think?
I like Salas's wrestling in this one. You know, Sago, good grappler. He's got good hands. I mean, he's pretty well-rounded kind of guy. Salas leans a little bit more heavily on his grappling, and I think that's probably the difference in this one. It's kind of a fun fight between lighter weight guys, but not... I mean, like, it's not going to be terribly exciting, but I'll say Salas by wrestling.
Salas, the plus 175 dog.
Sago, oh, I picked another underdog. Look at that. That's nice. Two.
And Sago, the minus 210 favorite.
It's like a 13-fight card, and I picked two dogs.
But that kind of sounds about right. I mean, the foreign cards usually have a few more, you know, dogs that you kind of sneak in, but it is what it is.
Yep.
And then basically the main event of Fight Pass, if you will, you have two veterans matching up at lightweight. One of my personal favorite fighters of all time, Jim Miller, only 1-2 in his last three, had the submission loss to Michael Chiesa, beat Danny Castillo before that, and then lost a decision to Benil Darouche. He will be fighting Diego the Nightmare Sanchez, who's coming off that loss to Ricardo Lamas at 145. He's moved back up for this fight. Before that, he had a controversial decision win over Ross Pearson. A loss to Miles Jury. Go back before that, a loss to Gilbert Melendez. And really, if you want to overturn the Ross Pearson fight, because it shouldn't have been a win for him, he's really on a four-fight losing streak, maybe even fighting to keep his job in the UFC, perhaps, unless they don't want him to go to Bellator because of whatever name value he has.
I don't think that they're worried about him leaving. This fight is so hard for me to call because back at 155, he's so much better than he is at 145. I mean, he gave Gil Melendez the fight of his life at 55. I mean, that
was a fun fight.
It was a brawl, and it was so good. And then he dropped down to 45, and he just looked awful. You know, like, I mean, he just barely eked out a decision against Ross Pearson, and most people think he lost that one. And I want to say Jim Miller.
I'm saying Jim Miller.
I want to say Jim Miller, but here's my issue with that. Draw a path to victory here for Jim Miller.
Submission.
Okay, but you think he's going to take Diego Sanchez down?
Eventually.
This is where I differ here. I don't see him being able to get Sanchez down. You know, like, Sanchez has got some pretty good defensive wrestling out of, you know, Jackson Winklejohn. He does really well with his defensive wrestling, and I just see it as, like, a very hard path to victory for Jim Miller. And that's hard for me to say because I also love Jim Miller. But if I was a betting man, which I am, I would pick Diego Sanchez on this one.
All right. Vegas has Sanchez as the plus 115, very slight dog. Jim Miller, minus 130 favorite. But you are going Sanchez.
I'm going to go Sanchez. And it hurts me to say that, too, because I do like Jim Miller so much.
All right. Well, that wraps up the entire card for UFC 196. Should be a really fun show. And the only last thing I'll say, Gumby, just because that is the main event, quote unquote, of Fight Pass. And I feel like we almost end every show just singing the Fight Pass praises. But I was thinking about it this weekend. Fight Pass had glory prelims on Friday night. And then they obviously moved Silva Bisping. That could have been a pay-per-view headliner potentially, or a fight, an FS1 fight card.
At least it could be Fox, I mean, for that matter.
Yeah, and they put it on Fight Pass for a reason, because that's obviously a service they're trying to pump up. They said live programming is going to be key. They're going after that WWE model. WWE has had a lot of success with their over-the-top network. They have about 1 million subscribers. UFC has never released how many subscribers they had. It's fair to say they don't have 1 million. Also, WWE, worth noting, took their product off pay-per-view, more or less, and started putting their pay-per-views on their subscription service for $10 a month. I don't know. Bisping Silva might have been the early kind of testing the waters. Maybe one day UFC moves off a pay-per-view.
I think they want to do that.
Eventually, right?
Yeah, the amount of programming that's coming out on Fight Pass makes it pretty clear to me that they don't want to keep paying the pay-per-view people. And they did it a few months ago. You can get discounts for buying the pay-per-view on UFC TV instead of buying it on pay-per-view.
And just so everyone knows, when, you know, a company hosts when a company puts on a pay-per-view, it's the cable companies that are actually hosting it. They typically get, if I'm not mistaken, 50% the revenue. So if you're paying, let's say, $60 for an HD pay-per-view, the cable companies retain $30 of that. Now, if you buy that pay-per-view on UFC.com or UFC Fight Pass, whatever it is, UFC gets all 60 of your dollars.
Yeah, well, and that's why they're cutting the price. I think the one I'm referring to is, I think 89, they offered a $15 discount if you bought, 189, $15 discount if you bought it on Fight Pass and, or UFC TV, I think it is when it's pay-per-view. So, I mean, you pay 45 bucks, but they net a $15 gain by you by giving you a $15 discount. So, like, I think they're moving to that as well, and I think that's why Jim Miller... Diego Sanchez is on
all
Fight
these,
Pass.
Yeah, they're now loading up the fight. Not loading up.
That's a better fight probably.
Than or, most of the things on FS1.
Yeah,
so
or,
you could,
and it's probably main card worthy too. I mean, not in terms of their wins recently, but in terms of name value, that's a better fight than John Volante and Ilir Latifi fighting third to last.
And it's funny. So I think the UFC has to serve a couple of different masters. They obviously love the Fox contract. It gives them mainstream exposure. It pays them ridiculously well. So they're always going to service FS1 and then the fights on Fox, but you can definitely see the tides turning a little bit where they are trying to pump up Fight Pass as much as possible as almost like a safety net, I think. You know, they could come out of this Fox contract. You never know what you're going to get. I think Fox has been very happy with them. It scores high in that, you know, all-important 18 to 35 demographic. But you know what? For all they know, in 2 years, Fox decides, it's too brutal for us. And now they don't have a Fox contract. That's not going to happen, don't get me wrong, because I think it's one of the biggest programming on FS1. But they're definitely pumping up Fight Pass, and as a fan, we are there to reap the rewards.
Just got to cross your fingers and hope they don't start jacking up the price of Fight Pass.
And
right?
They might.
That's what we've got to hope.
But
for.
Hey, I'm willing to pay $9.99 a month just for the Pride library and the Fight Pass library. So any live programming you want to add, like they added EBI, we already talked about it. But I don't know. I just wanted to say. The Silva Bisping, it was interesting too, right? Because they kind of had like a little pregame, postgame on Fight Pass. It was an all Fight Pass day, and it came off awesome. And I didn't have any buffering issues either, which is a good
sign. I didn't
either.
And that being said, I was also heading out that night, and I watched the last two fights in the backseat of my car while I was being driven to the bar.
That's
so
invaluable.
Like, yeah, I mean, like you can't hate that. Like your friends are like, it's time to go to the bar. It's time to go to the bar, and I'm like, yeah, but like. You know, Silva Bisping's about to be on, and you don't want to be the asshole because, like, you know, my friends aren't all MMA fans, but you just pop it on your phone. You watch it from there. You know, it's super, super nice because have any buffering problems there. The other thing I will say about Fight Pass before we sign off here is that they're doing really good at, like, ironing out the issues they have with it. So if you watched Fight Pass, you know, probably like two or three events ago for a full Fight Pass card, you had to click on the exclusive Fight Pass prelims, then click out of that window, load the prelims,
right.
Click out of that window and load the main card. This, you just opened the stream and the whole thing played front to back.
Yeah.
You didn't have to leave the screen once. You didn't have to reload. You didn't have to worry that the buffering wasn't going to happen in time.
Good user interface, as they say.
Yeah, it's getting better and better. And
good UI.
I think they're shoring things like that up. I know they're working on making sure they can get you more camera angles that you can play around with while you're watching the fight. So we'll see if those things work out. And if they do, you know, they have a subscriber for life in me.
Yeah, good time to be a fan. Good time to be a fan. All right, well, that about does it for us. Enjoy the fights, everyone. 196 is going to be amazing. The post-fight press conference could stand to be just as entertaining as the fights itself, so you're going to want to watch that. But if not, we will have you covered next week in our breakdown. When you get to the top turtle position in MMA, you should always be looking to finish. We are Top Turtle. We're finished.